Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
This is a CBC Podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is Wyco Blackheart. If you've spent any time on a hospital ward, clinic, or ER, you know nurses are indispensable to your well-being. And right now, those nurses are hurting like never before. Overworked, underpaid, targets for violence, burned out, and leaving the profession in droves. The thing is, being necessary for healthcare doesn't mean you have power, or even a voice and opinion to be reckoned with, which makes the gritty nurses all the more exceptional.
My one son, he has severe allergies to nuts. And watching him have an allergic reaction is very, very scary as a parent and as even as a nurse.
That's Amy Archibald Barley, a registered nurse in Ontario and one half of a very popular show called The Gritty Nurse Podcast. Each week, she and co-host slash fellow RN, Sarah Fung, examine hot topics related to healthcare. As they say on their website, we shy away from nothing. Amy's nod to her son's peanut allergy is how she personalizes her political comments about healthcare's deficiency. It's from a recent podcast episode in which she rants about parents who waited 11 hours in a Toronto ER till their son got treated for an allergic reaction.
The fact that they recognize that it's not the nurses, it's not the doctors, it's not even the system, that it's our government. Our government is intentionally continuing to gut, remove funding, remove services, increase privatization of healthcare, and just does not give a f-. So I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, okay, you know what? You're not doing that. You're not playing with kid gloves. We shouldn't be playing with kid gloves either.
The F-bombs are definitely part of the package. We first met Amy and Sarah on White Coat Black Art back in 2021.
Hi, my name is Amy Archibald Farley. I'm a podcaster, host of the Gritty Nurse Podcast, and a new author, co-author of the book, The Wisdom of Nurses.
Hi, I'm Sarah Fung. I'm a registered nurse. I am the other half of the Gritty Nurse Podcast, and also author of The Wisdom of Nurses.
We've brought them back because they've published a book worth checking out. It's called The Wisdom of Nurses, Stories of Grit from the Frontlines. There are lots of reasons why we seldom hear what nurses think about healthcare. Those who work in the system have good reason to fear being censured for speaking out. Amy and Sarah are fearless. Amy Archibald Barley and Sarah Fung, welcome back to White Coat Black Art.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Congratulations on the book.
Yay! I'm so excited. Thank you.
It's been a busy, busy week. We're super excited, though. It's really been a roller coaster.
Really has been. Your podcast is called The Gritty Nurse, and the subhead of the new book is Stories of Grit from the Frontlines. What is it about that word grit that means that's such a touchstone for you? Sarah, let's begin with you.
Nursing is not an easy profession, and you definitely need to have that grit to pick yourself back up when things don't go right, and especially because we do so much for patients. We're there for the best days, the worst days of their lives, everything in between. I think it's a trait that all nurses have, whether or not they realize it, and it's certainly what we needed to get through some difficult times. And the reason that we started the podcast is that we were having a difficult time at work and we needed to show grit. And we don't like to use the word resilience, but grit definitely is a term that I think is something that we all have within us. A lot of what we do doesn't get the credit it deserves. And a lot of it is that we have so much knowledge and wisdom within us that we wanted to write a book about all of the different great things nurses do and all the wisdom we can impart, not just upon our patients, but the greater society.
You, in your book, right off the top, you ask, you know, if people can name nurses. And, of course, you mentioned Florence Nightingale. And you know, here on White Coat Black Art, we have no trouble naming nurses. All you have to do is look at the ranks of hospital CEOs.
Right.
For instance, Leslie Thompson, who was a nurse before she became the CEO of Kingston General Hospital, where she put patients on hospital committees and gave them a voice. Now she runs Accreditation Canada. Vicky Kaminsky, who was a nurse before running Health Sciences Center in Sudbury, Health Sciences North. Then she ran Eastern Health, and then she moved to Alberta. And you know, there are so many nurses like that. So I want to ask you, Sarah, why do nurses make the best hospital CEOs?
I think that nurses have a lot of transferable skills from what they learn at the bedside, and it translates into really understanding what it is like at the ground level. And they see all of the problems along the way, and they really have a boots on the ground perspective as to how to solve these problems. I think in a lot of cases, you know, we have those critical thinking skills. We can read rooms. We can build relationships. I think I could go on, but there are so many things about nursing that make them perfect candidates to be CEOs.
You know, I would add one more attribute to that list, and that is the ability to rebound from adversity and use adversity to gather strength. And I'm thinking that the two of you met working in leadership at the same hospital. Amy, you recruited Sarah, right?
I did.
Can you tell me about what was going on for both of you at the same time that helped you connect?
You know, really, when I think back to how we first started to connect, we actually, Sarah was the first person who recruited me in a previous role where I was a labor and delivery nurse, but then moved into leadership. But then the second role, I recruited her. But we really bonded over our experiences in maternal child. Of course, that we both had children that were similarly aged. But then we further bonded over the fact that there were some mental health challenges, particularly bullying. We were both bullied by our senior leader at that particular organization, which we do talk about in the book. And we both left the organization. I quit actually before Sarah. I quit about 2 weeks before her, had no job prospects lined up. But the important thing was preserving my own mental health and sanity. And again, there was just no supports. You would think that in healthcare that we would have better supports for mental health and people would be more understanding. But we found that that was the complete opposite. So we were able to bond over that. And that's how the Gritty Nurse podcast kind of came to light. I remember just saying to Sarah, hey, nobody listened to us. Why don't we just create our own table? We'll say what we want to say. And, you know, maybe someone will listen, maybe someone won't, but at least we'll share our experiences because we knew that we couldn't be alone. So that's how we connected.
Amy, can you say some of the things that were going on? You talked about being bullied. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it all started, I think there was like a little bit of a honeymoon phase, right? You start new, fresh at a job. And then I remember slowly the gaslighting would start. So it could be something as simple as, you know, we sit in a meeting together with our various leaders and folks around the table. And I might just discuss, hey, this was what we discussed previously in this meeting. And then the leader might have been like, no, we've never had that conversation. And it would make me look like I was crazy, or it would go to situations where I was actually being yelled at and demeaned in front of my peers and colleagues, to which colleagues would turn to me and say, are you, like, the meeting would end and they'd be like, are you okay? Like, that was really unprofessional. I don't know why this individual is treating you this way. And it really started to make me question, like, am I poorly performing in my job? And I knew that wasn't the case. And it got so bad to the point where I would hear this individual coming down the hall and I would be terrified. I'd turn off the light in my office. I actually would hide underneath my desk to avoid this individual.
Wow.
And obviously got to a point where it was untenable and it was unsafe for me to be there. And even when I brought that forward to, again, other leaders, some of the things that they would say is, maybe this is not your time, or, you know, maybe it's the workload. And I was like, it's not the workload, it's the individual. And again, no support was really given to, you know, to really help me at that time.
Sarah, you were having experiences of your own. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, in a different organization, I actually started in a role and the person that held that role previously was still on the team. So I thought this is a perfect situation because they're still on the team. They can tell me everything I need to know. They can introduce me to everyone. Well, it turned out the exact opposite happened, where this person seemed bent on making sure that I did not succeed, to the point where one of my roles was to review cases when things went wrong. And this person would purposely not give me information I needed to do the job. So when people say that poor teamwork leads to poor outcomes, that's a perfect example. I was supposed to be reviewing cases where things went wrong, and as a team, we were supposed to be making recommendations. I wasn't even getting that information, and I was being told, oh, you didn't know this happened? Well, you should have known. And at the time, I was expected to cover three different sites, so I couldn't even physically be on the unit. And, you know, to the point where they would cut down my suggestions in front of a large group of people. They would purposely make comments about my physical appearance, which made me very uncomfortable. I remember going to my office one day and just locking the door and crying because I didn't know what to do and I didn't have anybody to talk to. So it wasn't really until Amy came along that I felt like I had someone to talk to that understood what I was going through.
Did either of you, Amy, Sarah, know what the other was going through until you started to confide in one another?
Yeah, not really. Like, I think we had a sense that, you know, there were some challenges that we would have these car ride homes where we'd talk and vent about our frustrations and challenges on the job. But we never really sat down in detail that, you know, we think this particular individual was pinpointing either myself or Sarah. It was really only until afterwards that we were kind of like, this happened to me too. And that's kind of, it was really after having those conversations that it was like, wow, I didn't realize it was that bad for you. And wow, I didn't realize it was that bad for you as well. So it was really, really unfortunate that that had to happen to both of us.
Yeah, and I do what a lot of nurses do, I think, whereas when someone treats me poorly, I immediately blame myself. So the reason that I didn't share with you, Amy, was because I thought it was only happening to me. I thought it was something that I was doing wrong, yeah. And that I was the only one that was doing something wrong, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the gaslighting, right?
Absolutely. And feeling like you're alone, I think that's part of it. When you're being gaslit, you're made to feel like this is your fault and you're the only one going through it and you're not worthy and you're not adequate.
One thing that we need to dismantle is the fact that, you know, we don't see ourselves as equal players or equal contributors to the care team, right? And that's a problem too. So I think that's another aspect that we need to talk about, but I don't know if we have time to dive into that today.
I would agree. And I think part of the problem is that a lot of bullies are never held accountable, particularly when they're in positions of leadership. There's this term that I discovered a couple years ago, and it's called toxic rock star.
Toxic rock star.
Yeah, toxic rock stars.
So a toxic rock star is someone who delivers results on paper. So let's say they're able to improve the bottom line, but at the expense of everyone else on the team. And when you look at the team that's under them, there's high turnover. So they're not being held accountable for the high turnover. Good people that leave under the leadership of this person, but they're looking at their accomplishments, so to speak. And it's really sad because the leaders that Amy and I speak about, they're still in those positions. And in some cases, they've moved up during this time. But their reputations have not changed, yet nothing is being done about it.
Even now, nothing's being done about it.
Nope, they're still there in these positions, which is, it's amazing to think about, you know, that sometimes these behaviors, like Sarah said, are promoted up as opposed to being promoted out. Or even, you know, conversations aren't necessarily had about changing the way that people behave. I think that would be pivotal in healthcare if we actually started calling out bad behaviors and people actually being penalized for them. I think that would be huge, or given an opportunity to at least make change or to do something differently. I think that would be a huge shift in healthcare. Is it going to happen? I will have to wait and see.
You know, we have physicians and nurses, nurse practitioners, registered practical nurses, and other healthcare providers all dealing with unprecedented shared crises like burnout, quitting, emergency department closures. Are you seeing any change? Do we have each other's backs, Amy?
You know, I have seen a shift, right? Where I've seen various different coalitions, particularly emergency department physicians like yourself, really come out and show out for nursing and vice versa. I do see that there is a shift in terms of how things are being done. But again, we need to continue to build on our teamwork skills. We need to continue to build off of how we could better partner together, how we could better communicate. And I think that, you know, you have an excellent book where you talk about the power of teamwork. And I think it's important that we continue to go down that route. We continue to dismantle hierarchies and we continue to have an open conversation with one another. Because again, if our goal is the same, we need to be able to work together. And I think that means having some courageous conversations and also calling out some bad actors when that occurs. But I do see that the support is starting to pick up and build up, particularly during the pandemic, and it is continuing on. So I'm looking forward to seeing how we can continue building our relationships together with physicians as well.
Frontline healthcare workers of different kinds are under stress these days. They're beginning to realize they have that in common. That Amy and Sarah believe that is comforting. We'll be right back.
Okay, don't skip ahead. I'm going to talk to you about climate change. And I know it can get depressing or infuriating, but our show takes a different approach. It's Laura Lynch, and I'm the host of What on Earth, and we're all about solutions and hope. And I promise, no matter how overwhelming climate change might feel, we're with you on the journey to fix this mess. So listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Black Heart. This week, a conversation with Amy Archibald Barley and Sarah Fung, registered nurses and co-hosts of the Gritty Nurse podcast. Their book is called The Wisdom of Nurses, Stories of Grit from the Front Lines. It's one thing to complain about what's wrong with healthcare. Quite another to take the next step and articulate how things should change. Here's part two of our conversation.
You know, as I hear you speak, Amy, and Sarah as well, I hear you as emerging advocates. You both made that pivot, as I have made that pivot. What made both of you want to do that, to go from actively nursing to advocating for nurses and helping them tell their stories?
I think that I just realized that there was so much fear and silencing in nursing that we would always have these what I call break room conversations where we would vent to each other, but nothing was ever done about it. And we were not speaking to the right people. We were just preaching to the choir. And what really shifted for me was I realized that we needed to talk to more people and we needed to have a bigger platform. And so advocacy, the podcast, writing the book is a way to reach more people and keep this conversation going and eventually switch the mindset of more people. And I think just having power in numbers, having more people hear a story, more people know they're not alone and know that there is something that can be done is really empowering.
You know, Amy, your pivot to journalism and advocacy resonates with me, both of you. You know, I still work in the emergency department, though, since White Coat Black Guard. There are times when I've sensed a distance between me and other physicians. Is that what's been the reaction from nurses and physicians and other healthcare providers to your public work?
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question. I think as soon as I mentioned that I am a freelance journalist, I think a lot of nurses, either they clamor up and they don't want to say anything, or they're just like, wow, that is actually really, really interesting. And how did you get into that? But I think for the most part, it's been positive, because again, this is where we need to see nurses in various different aspects. How could I not use my voice and advocacy to, you know, bring that to a news story or to highlight something that, you know, maybe folks don't know about or understand about from a journalistic standpoint? And I think that, you know, a lot of folks find it rewarding to see nurses in different positions. So as much as some people might be a little bit shocked, they find it quite exciting to see that, you know, I've taken on this role of activism as well as journalism.
I think nurses are just surprised pleasantly to see that you can be in these spaces. We certainly, Amy and I, we didn't have any role models doing what we do now. We kind of just went for it. And so why I do what I do also is to show nurses that you can do it. And there's a huge fear about either losing your job or losing your license by advocating. So I want to show nurses that it is possible to advocate and not have these things happen. So there's just showing the public that nurses can do things that traditionally we haven't been seen doing.
Yeah, I feel like just adding the more I'm told that I can't be in a space, the more I'm told that I shouldn't be in a space or that I might get in trouble for that, for doing something or saying that, is the more likely I'm going to be able to make myself take up that space. So I think that's just something that nurses need to do. You need to take up space. And just because you're told that you can't doesn't mean that you can't, and that you need to at least don't knock it until you try it.
You know, the two of you cover some very gritty subjects in your podcast. Was there anything that you were nervous about covering, Amy?
Oh my goodness. I would probably say that we were nervous about, you know, talking so viscerally about our own mental health struggles. I think, of course, it's never an easy conversation to talk about yourself in that particular way. But again, I think the reason why myself and Sarah did was to let other people know that they were not alone. I would say that's probably the scariest aspect of our book for me, and being so visceral and open about how I struggled with mental health.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm still nervous about sharing my bullying experiences, because there's still some part of me that thinks that there's going to be retaliation. Even though I know I don't work at this organization anymore, I have not spoken to these individuals for years, there's still something in the back of my mind that is waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I wrote a little book called The Night Shift. That was my first. And the two of you have things to say about the night shift in your new book, The Wisdom of Nurses. Amy, you like night shifts.
I love them. And I think this is where, you know, if Sarah and I differ, Sarah loves the day shift. I love the night shift. I just found that there was so much more camaraderie on nights, and a real opportunity to actually learn a lot about, you know, your nursing colleagues. Because of course, you know, particularly if you don't have a busy shift, or, you know, sometimes in labor delivery you didn't have any patients, that we would sit down and, you know, really get to know each other. We created a family and a community. I think that for me is just, you know, sometimes I was really able to kind of get down and do the work that I wanted to do, because there wasn't that administrative burden that there is on the day shift, where, you know, there might be many huddles, or you're stopped to do this, or you're paused to, you know, take a photo with a politician who comes in. You're like, I still have meds to give. So I found that nights really gave you the opportunity to, one, learn more about your patients, and two, learn more about your colleagues.
One of the things I love about night shifts is not having to keep answering the phone with unsolicited calls.
100%.
And I feel like if I have time to think, one of the things you said resonated with me. In the book, you said that you felt like you had more autonomy at night. And I'm going to suggest agency, you know, that you made a bigger difference, that your opinion was more important in that moment. And I certainly feel the same way. I feel as if I have more time to think. Can you talk about that autonomy that you have felt when you work at night?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's a really empowering thing when, you know, particularly you bring a baby into the world by yourself, which I've done a couple times. And I think it's really empowering to be that person, to be able to say, hey, I actually did that. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie that I really enjoyed those aspects of care, but it really makes It does make you feel much more empowered, and makes you feel that you have agency and autonomy in those particular aspects.
Sarah, you seem to have a different view of night shifts.
You know, I enjoy everything that you just said. It's just for me, the sleep was always the issue. So I was one of those people that could never sleep before or after a night shift properly. That's why I stayed away from them. I found that I was eating all night during my shift, and then I would go home and eat all day because I couldn't sleep, and that wasn't healthy for me. There's just a different feel. Even though you're in the same physical space, it's a completely different world at night.
I hate to close out this conversation, but we are coming to a close, and I really need to ask one last thing, because it's important. We can't have this conversation without talking about the fact that nurses are leaving the profession, or thinking about leaving the profession, as never before, young and old. Why is this happening, Amy?
You know, I think this again speaks to the fact of, you know, nursing being silenced as a profession. And we've been sounding the alarm bell for many, many years. I remember talking about, you know, nursing shortage when I was in nursing school, and talking about the fact that, you know, retention has been an issue for many years. And again, we saw the crippling effects of COVID-19 on the workforce through burnout, through, you know, mental health distress, through moral injury, where nurses were just saying, you know what? I've had enough. Like many of my friends and colleagues who had been in the profession for many years, whether they were early career, mid-career, just say, you know what, I'm done. I would rather work in a different area than continue to be treated this way. I'm so excited that we do now have a Chief Nursing Officer of Canada, which we didn't have for over 10 years, which is Dr. Lee Chapman. And I was able to, myself and Sarah were able to work on the Nursing Retention Toolkit, which is really talking about what nurses need to stay at the bedside. And now I really hope that each of the provinces, because there was that historic announcement with Minister Mark Holland of the $200 billion that will come into healthcare. And now it's really up to the provinces to put their money where their mouth is to retain nurses, to look at this document and say, nurses are talking about aspects related to childcare, related to having proper staffing complements, related to better wages. And I really hope that the government does listen to us, because again, we'll just continue losing more and more experience and expertise, and that will put patients and families at risk. The more we leave, the more we can't support because of the disrespect. It's problematic. So I really hope that we'll see some change.
Sarah, last word to you. What do you think the system needs to provide so that we retain nurses better than we've been doing now these last few years, particularly the last few years?
I think the first thing is very simple, is listen to what nurses have to say. This toolkit that we speak of was created with an incredible amount of input from a wide variety of nurses at all different levels, all different practice settings. It is a playbook for how we can bring nurses back to the profession and retain the ones that are still here. So we talk of it very specific things like flexibility and work scheduling, more mental health support, support for leaders too. How do you become a great leader? It can't just be because you've been a nurse for a certain number of years. There has to be some support and some accountability that goes into being a leader. So it goes into a lot of detail about what is actually needed. So I think now the onus is on leaders, organizations, and governments to look at this document and actually put the resources in it that are needed.
But first, listen to the wisdom of nurses.
100%.
Amy Archibald Barley and Sarah Fung, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Good luck with the book, and thanks for joining us on White Coat Black Art.
Thank you so much for having us.
In unison.
The Nursing Retention Toolkit Amy and Sarah talked about was developed for nurses by nurses. One of the toolkit's key aims is to empower nurses of all levels, roles, and settings to experience fulfillment in their work and to become leaders within their organizations. It would not surprise me to count Amy and Sarah among those leaders in the years ahead. That's our show this week. If you'd like to comment, our email address is whitecoat@cbc.ca. White Coat Black Art was produced this week by Jennifer Warren with help from Stephanie Dubois and Samir Chabra. Our digital writer is our intern, Gwyneth Egan. Our digital producer is Ruby Buiza. Our senior producer is Colleen Ross. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.